This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Live and Learn. I'm Lee Chui Lin. Rainforest Hero, The Life and Death of Bruno Manser is the first English biography of the Swiss human rights activist and environmentalist. Famed for leading campaigns to protect the Penan people from the uncontrolled deforestation of their land in Sarawak's forests, Bruno was a fearless activist who led protests around the world, but who ultimately lost it all in the name of the forests and people he loved. I find out more about his extraordinary life from Bruno's biographer, Rudy Suter, who has just launched Rainforest Hero here in Malaysia. Rudy, I understand that you're a journalist and you write about the environment and human rights. Perhaps you could tell me a bit about yourself.
Okay. I am a Swiss journalist. I'm 63 years old. I wrote my whole life about indigenous peoples, about human rights, about ecology especially.
When did you first hear about Bruno's story?
I heard that when he was here in Sarawak. This was in the mid of the 80s.
What was it about the story in particular that piqued your interest or caught your attention and, you know, made you want to write more about him?
Okay. Because I wrote already quite a lot about indigenous peoples, I heard that he is living with the Penan, hunter and gatherers. And so I was, of course, interested what this guy is doing now in the forests.
Let's look at Bruno's life then, starting with his early years. They took place in Basel, in Switzerland. What was it like?
Okay, he was quite a special boy. Already as a boy, he loved nature very much. He wanted, for example, to sleep during winter time outside on the balcony on leaves. And, you know, also in the 0 degree, he just have done it. And nobody understood that because this is strange in Switzerland. So he loved very much the nature. He went out. He tried to be outside in the nature when it was possible.
And from those early years, you know, did he speak a lot about? Did he speak a lot about perhaps one day wanting to go to other parts of the world, wanting to explore?
Well, at the beginning, he didn't, because he was a very intelligent and athletic young man, and he wanted first to learn all the skills you need if you are, for example, alone in the mountains. And so he didn't visit the university. His university was the nature. And during 11 years, he worked as a shepherd in the Swiss mountains, and that was a very hard life. But he learns to live out in the nature.
I've read also that he was an ardent follower of non-violent ideologies espoused by Mahatma Gandhi, and so refused to participate in Switzerland's compulsory military service. What happened to him there?
That's right. You have to know that in Switzerland, everybody, every man has to go to military service. And he just said, I will not do that. I don't want to take a gun in my hands and I don't want to shoot at other people. So he said, no, I don't go. That was then the reason that he landed in the jail, in prison. Because, and then he was in prison several months.
How did that time in prison impact his worldview?
It didn't impact it. Well, he saw, of course, that that was not his nature, his beloved nature. He was in prison, and this is not a good feeling. When he came out, he immediately went to the mountains.
And what ultimately led him from Swiss mountains to Borneo jungles?
Okay. You know, he learned everything during these 11 years, making his clothes, for example, making even shoes, killing animals for food, etc., etc. After 11 years as shepherd, he thought, well, I have to go somewhere to find people like I am. And so he came to Sarawak, and he entered in the jungle. And he found the Penan.
He ended up staying with the Penan people, immersing himself in their way of life and culture. What was the process of doing this? You know, so he found them, but how did he become a part of their community?
Well, he just, as I told you, he just entered in the jungle. Nobody of us would do that, you know. He just walked. And then he found the first family of Penan, and they accepted him quite quick. And why? Because he was not a burden for the Penan. He knew already everything how to do, and he learned very quick the language. He learned also to hunt, and he behaved like them. He didn't have clothes anymore, and he walked barefoot, etc. So the Penan accepted him as a new Penan member.
He adjusted more quickly, I think, than some people would adjust to life in cities at this point. It was also, however, around this time that rapid deforestation was taking place in Sarawak and disrupting the lives of the Penan community. How did this affect Bruno?
Well, you know, when he came to Sarawak to see the Penan, he found his paradise. And then one day he heard the saws of the logging companies, and it was for him absolutely a shock. And he wanted to go away, but then he saw that the Penan, they don't have the means to defend themselves. They didn't know what went on. So he became the lawyer of the Penan, and he helped them to defend the Penan against these logging companies who were supported also by the government.
What were some of his efforts in defense of the Penan people?
Of course, the government and the logging companies weren't amused about this white man. And finally, he ended to be the enemy of state number one of Malaysia. And he didn't want that because, as I told you, he was always a peaceful man. He had good organized guerrilla forces, you know, with guns, etc. But he never thought to fight with arms for the freedom of the Penan.
What forms did his activism take? You know, if it wasn't in the form of, you know, guerrilla warfare and so on, what did he actually end up doing? What forms did his protests take?
Well, he tried to talk to the officials and to the logging to the loggers also. But then when he was chased, he was visited by international press, and then he became famous. And then because he saw that the government don't hear what he wants to say, he tried to speak over the international press, and so he got famous.
He also made a lot of famous enemies, timber barons, federal and state governments, even the then Prime Minister of Malaysia, Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad, among others. How did he deal with being, as you say, enemy number one, you know, in the Malaysian sphere?
Well, he saw Mr. Tahir Mahmud, who a normal person would say that was the enemy of Bruno, but he never talked about enemies. He said, I want to explain Mr. Mahmud that he helps to destroy the livelihood of the Penan. And he tried this different times, but Mr. Mahmud didn't want to hear that. And then what concerns Mr. Mahathir, he met Mr. Mahathir in Brazil, and they talked together, and he said, he's a nice man, Mr. Mahathir, and he heard what I was saying, and so he never talked about enemies.
I'm speaking today with Rudy Suter, author of Rainforest Hero, The Life and Death of Bruno Mansa. We are exploring just that, the life of Bruno Mansa. Up next, we talk about his disappearance in 2000. You are listening today to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. You are listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture. I'm Lee Chui Lin. Sitting opposite me today is Rudy Suter, author of Rainforest Hero, The Life and Death of Bruno Mansa. And it is just that we are talking about today. We've talked about what brought him to Sarawak, what brought him to live with the Penan people. And I understand that he himself admitted that he didn't bring positive changes to Sarawak, though his campaigns had headway abroad. Why did he feel that way? Why did he feel that, you know, there was more international attention than there was within state?
All the people worldwide, because he became famous worldwide, all the people who also think that we should stop to destroy the forests and to destroy also our livelihood. Because, you know, it was not only a critic on Malaysia, it was a critic also on our European technical civilization. And he made many actions, he said, also to the European, you have to live in another way. Because if we all, we mankind, if we start to, if we continue to live in this way, we will lose our livelihood. That was his message.
His disappearance in 2000 remains shrouded in mystery. What details do we know about the events that lead up to his disappearance?
Well, he built up his organization. This is the Bruno Manzer in Switzerland, still active. And he knew that he have to go all years, if possible, he have to go to visit the Penans, because they still needed more than before his voice. And so he entered different times, also illegally, of course, to Sarawak, just to say, hello, I'm fighting for you. And that was one of his main work he have done then.
But before he disappeared in 2000, what do we know about his movements? What do we know about the events that led up to the last time he was seen?
He made, for example, a worldwide tour, and he explained the problems of the Penan and of the destruction of the rainforests. Not only of the Penan, also everywhere, you know, in the Amazonas, in the Congo, in Siberia, everywhere you have this problem. And so he became a speaker of all indigenous rainforest people.
What attempts were made to find him after he disappeared?
Okay, there are a lot of activities. There were different search expeditions with the Penan also. Then there were also on the diplomatic level. They looked for him.
I read that you were actually involved in one of the final searches for Bruno. Could you share that experience with me?
Yes, I was once. I was with his brother, Eric Manzer. We visited the Penan, and they led us to the Batulawi, who is a huge mountain there. And we tried to find a sign of his disappearance. And during 2 weeks, it was very hard for me, because I'm not so used to walk in the jungle. But we didn't find a single sign.
15 years on, you know, that happened 15 years ago. 15 years on, what are some of the theories surrounding his disappearance? What do we know? What do people think?
There are different theories, for example, that he had an accident, that a branch fell on the head, or that he fell in a hole, that he was bitten by a snake. There is also the theory that he was killed by police or by loggers or by a special branch. Also a theory that he disappeared. He wanted to disappear because he saw that his fight was finally useless.
With no resolution.
With now, yeah.
I read and a civil court in Basel declared Bruno to be legally dead on the 10th of March 2005. In your opinion, what legacy has he left us with?
So he just wanted to stop the destruction of the nature. That was his main aim. And he wanted to say to the whole mankind, you have to live in a modest way, much more modest way than you do it now. Our exploitation will ruin the whole world. That was finally his message.
Earlier you talked about all those different theories that people have around his around the end of what we know about him. As you were talking about searching for him with his brother, I was wondering whether, how has his family and his friends coped with, not knowing exactly what has happened?
Because this was a very sad situation, and it's still now. You know, you think, what has happened with this man? You know this situation from wars, for example. But today they accepted it, that he's not here anymore. But it was hard, that's clear, for everybody who knew him.
I've read some criticism about Bruno, where he was dismissed as, you know, just another white man with a savior complex. Based on your research, did many, especially the community that he worked so hard for, the Penan community, did they feel this way about him?
No, absolutely not. Because, as I told you, he learned he was himself, he was a Penan. So that was an invention of, I would say, of my colleagues, that he's the white man who wants to make a revolution in Penanland. But that wasn't the way, no.
When you were writing this book, how long did it take you to research and complete the book?
Well, altogether, it took me 2 years, because it's not only a book, you know, about Bruno. It's also a book about our generation from the 50s on, which had a very good time in Europe. No? And it was just to make clear what happens till now.
So if it's not just about Bruno, you know, does it also cover, you've mentioned what his message is. What do you think your message is in terms of trying to say, you know, look at this man, but also look at all these other issues? What is your message?
Well, my message is, I think Bruno was right to say we cannot continue with a civilization, with our way to live. We cannot continue, because maybe in 30, 50 years, we will not have the possibility anymore to live on this planet. That's very simple. Everybody can see that.
Coming back to the writing of the book, who did you speak to? You know, where did you travel to gather all the facts about Bruno's life and to write the book?
I was in the forests, of course, and I talked to dozens of people who knew him. That was very important for me. But he had also, you know, he was also drawing, he was making notes, he wrote also a book. So for me, it was quite easy to understand what he felt and what he meant.
What, if anything, got left out of the final draft? You know, with all this information, trying to compile it into a book, what did you end up cutting out?
Well, of course, if you write a book like that about a man, you know, you will never find out everything. It is clear. I just tried to describe the main points of his life and of our life, of our situation, actually. This I tried.
You've been traveling around to promote the book. Is there still a lot of support for Bruno here in our country?
Well, it was amazing that there quite a lot of people came, you know. But of course, if you have millions of inhabitants, we would say now that this is nothing. But I think Bruno will gain more and more importance, because what he said, we will see that he was right.
For more information, you can visit bmf.ch or gbgarapbudaya.com. Thank you very much for speaking with me, Rudy. I've been speaking with Rudy Suter, author of Rainforest Hero, The Life and Death of Bruno Mansur. You've been listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.